Hi, I'm Chloe McCulloch, Editorial Director for Building Magazine and Housing Today. And this is Home Truths, a Building Talks podcast looking at the housing crisis, brick by brick. Your presenters for this series are two people well-placed to break down the issues around Britain's broken housing market. Peter Bill?
Yes, I'm Peter. I used to be important. But before I was important, I worked for 20 years in the building trade as a QS. Half of that time working for a house builder. I then moved on into journalism. Years ago, I edited Building Magazine, and slightly fewer years ago, I edited the Estates Gazette magazine. A bit later than that, writing a book called Planet Property, and a bit later than that, writing a book called Broken Homes, Solving Britain's Housing Crisis.
And Jackie Sadek.
Yes, I'm Jackie, and I've spent way over 40 years in the property development and urban regeneration industry. I started my career at the London Docklands Development Corporation. I've worked for private sector developers, I've worked in the public sector, both for local authorities and for government agencies, and I ended up as a government advisor. After coming out of government, I then co-wrote Broken Homes with the aforementioned Peter Bill.
Peter and Jackie will be pulling no punches, either with each other or with the high-profile guests they'll be talking to each week about how we provide the housing the country needs to thrive.
Actually, what we do need is a very radical rethink about how we provide housing in this country. And it's affecting everything we do. It's affecting our entire economy.
Houses are built by house builders to make money. And if they can't make any money, they stop building them like they did last year. So we thought it would be worthwhile exploring this issue. It seems to be terribly important to everybody, but there seems to be no answers.
So keep listening for the thoughts and ideas of key people from across the housing sector in this pivotal election year.
This is Home Truths,
a Building Talks podcast.
Well, good morning, Pierre Labille. Here we are yet again at the Home Truths podcast. And this morning, I'm very excited to say we've got Darren Rodwell joining us.
Good morning to you, Miss Sadek. I'm really excited to listen to Darren because there are very few people in politics who've actually done things before they became politicians. And Darren is one of them. Darren is a guy who was brought up on an estate in East London.
Well, he's Mr. Barking and Dagenham, isn't he really? I mean, he's leader of Barking and Dagenham Council. He was born in Barking, brought up in Dagenham, and he's about to become the parliamentary candidate for the Labour Party, representing the constituency of Barking. So you couldn't get much more Barking and Dagenham than that.
I hope not. I mean, I think there's little chance that he will lose the seat in Barking and Dagenham. I think we both would want to wish this type of Labour politician well in the party in future. I think the more Darrens they get in, the better it will be for them.
So we've entitled this episode, Bricks and Mortar, Hearts and Minds.
This is Home Truths, a Building Talks podcast.
Good morning and welcome to Darren Rodwell, Councillor Darren Rodwell, leader of Barking and Dagenham and prospective parliamentary candidate, I believe, for... Tell us what the seat's called.
Barking, it's really simple.
Right, so yeah. You're going to be the MP for Barking.
Well, no, I'm the prospective candidate.
Indeed.
The votes happen, then I'm still the leader of Barking and Dagenham, but more importantly, a lad from the borough.
Indeed, and very famous for it, and we won't be counting our chickens. But just to say, Darren, welcome, welcome, welcome. We're thrilled to have you here to talk about housing delivery, really, which is your big expertise. Do you want to just start, though, because you've got such an interesting life story, just by telling us a little bit about where you came from. When you were 7 years old, did you think you were going to be the leader of Barking and Dagenham Council?
When I was 37 years old, I didn't think I'd be the leader of Barking and Dagenham Council. I've always been a community activist. My parents bred that into me. So if we saw something that wasn't right for our community, we would ask questions and sort of try and make change happen. So I remember growing up it was very poor in those times and very tough. And I've always lived in and around the Becontree estate. I'm very proud of the estate, always been in the borough. Very proud single parent. So I was a single parent for a decade. Could never get a council place. So knew that there was already an issue. And it doesn't matter where you come from around the world, what religion you are, where you are in status terms. Everyone wants a home that's warm, safe and affordable to them. Everyone wants a community that they can live amongst and be valued, and they can value the place. And then everyone wants their children to do better than they did. And that's how I've done my politics. So I was 38 when the BNP got a serious number of seats in my borough, gave up my business, rebuilt the Labour Party locally, and fought the BNP with Margaret Hodge against Nick Griffin and his merry men.
Mm. Can you remember an incident when you were quite young that made you angry and set you on your path?
There was many, actually, but Brian Gould, a nice chap, came to my school.
So he was the MP
he
for
was
Barking
the MP
and
at the time, yeah.
The man who went back to New Zealand.
That man indeed.
I remember Brian Gould.
Yes. So he came to my school, and it was really funny because I saw Mr. Bullock a couple of years ago now, when he recounted the story as well. And he said his blood ran cold when he saw me put my hand up to ask a question of Mr. Gould. And my question was quite simple. How do you feel that you can represent a working class area like Barking and Dagenham when you've got three private houses, four cars, and all your children went to private school? At which point he found it very difficult to answer.
How old were you then?
I was probably about 13, 14.
Okay, and Mr. Bullock was the headmaster.
He was the headmaster, yeah. And he was the one who had to tell me to stop being entrepreneurial because I made the school canteen run at a loss because I was selling snack bars out of my school bag at the time, which was quite a good return. And I led the largest school walkout in the borough's history.
So you were pretty bolshy then at that age?
I would say single-minded in making sure that people got what they needed.
So, Darren, you're pretty famous in...
Infamous.
I was going to say famous in amongst the housing cognoscenti for having got on and delivered the largest number of social housing starts in London. I think Brent have done more starts in totality, is that right? But you've done the most... affordable.
Yeah, so we've done the most social affordable.
Yeah.
And Brent, they're the largest house builder, and well done to Mo and the team over there, Sharma. They've done an excellent job in getting the private sector in. But I've done the most in actually facilitating homes that Londoners can truly afford. And that's fine. Both are needed. And, you know, in every area of housing, we need desperately more housing. And that's the issue with the housing market today is... 40 years of non-investment has basically broken it, and none of it actually works properly.
Just quickly tell us how you went about it, Darren. You became leader.
Yep.
You perceived there was a problem.
Yep.
Just in a few sound bites, tell us exactly how you did it.
So after talking to 68,000 people against the BNP, I understood what people wanted. Those three things I mentioned at the beginning. Was clear. So the biggest issue for any community is to make sure someone has a home. So what I needed to do was work out what mechanism could I make that happen in the quickest way possible with the most flexibility. So that was bringing together public service with the private ingenuity. And because I'd worked in the private sector, I realized that, if you like, the red tape of local government, regional government, national government can get in the way. So we set up Be First to deliver and be a house building, development, investment and planning company, wholly owned by the local authority. And then we had Reside, which was at the time, it already started, but it was not necessarily by complete design because it was only a very simple, you pay this rent, 65% at that time. For a few properties that people could afford at that time. I've changed that now into 6 rental level. So it's starts or council equivalent rent, 50% market rent. Both of those are in the LHA, local housing allowance, which means that people on benefits and people on low wage income can afford those and get support from the state. Then you've got 65% market rent, which is the mayor's living rent. Then you've got 80% the intermediate, 100% because some people can and should pay what they can afford. And then there's shared ownership as well. I call it the right to invest. So when you do that, what you're actually doing is stopping poor doors or gated communities, and you're not doing gentrification any longer. You're doing inclusive growth. So everyone has the ability to be part of that change.
Can I ask how many, when did you start B First, and how far along the line are you towards your 50,000 target by 2037?
So where we are, we started B First just about 6 years ago, over 6 years ago when it came fully operational. Where are we? Well, we'll have 5,000 homes by 2026, 27 that B First itself has built. But remember, we're also working with three other build to rent organisations in the borough. They're already there. We've got a number of different developers and investors coming in as well. So if you ask me what monies have come in and where are we going with it all, B First has put 27,000 homes through planning. And I say through planning because they introduce it. It's obviously still the members that will agree or not agree, which is quite a number in the last 5 years. And then you look at what we've managed to achieve, as I say, 20% of London's social affordable housing since lockdown is quite a number, and that will continue.
Well, what is the number?
The total number that we've done?
I mean, if we just stick to social.
Well, social...
Oh, no, don't. No, no. Stick to your 50,000.
I was going to say, you can't do that because... So I really struggle with social housing being the name. Because social housing was what was given by Margaret Thatcher to say you're not good enough to buy a house because you're on the social. So I like council properties. What we've also got to understand is there's not one type of person that needs help. And our problem in London, and possibly across the country, is we think there's people in need and there's people that can buy. We forget about the 90% of the people in the middle. And so what we've done is we've given, as I say, six different rental models plus the ability to people to invest. So by doing that, I class it all as one. And that's what we've got to do if we really want to fix the housing model in this country right now.
How many people are living in these new houses so far? How many are completed?
Well, at the moment, there's probably about 5,000 with us as Reside and the private sector. So there's 45,000 to go, but there's another, we would have built another close to 3,000 by 2026, 27, and the private sector would have probably done double that. So
you're going to get there then, are you?
Of course, we always get there.
Okay. You'll have to forgive my learned friend, Darren, because, you know, he trained as a quantity surveyor and sometimes it shows, you know, because he gets a bit obsessed with the numbers.
But what's really interesting, and it is true, actually, what ability do we have? We've already put 27,000 homes through planning. That means every one of those homes could be built if we have the right business model for it. And that's where the challenge now is. There's actually 1.5 million homes that could be built in England and Wales today. There's 289,000 in London alone. So actually the planning permissions are there. What isn't there is the know-how to get them out of the ground. And that's what we've got to really challenge. Government at national, regional and local.
Just before we move on, we are going to get to the national level, really. Can I just ask you about the construction risk in your model? Because, you know, I don't need to tell you how many councils have screwed this up.
Yeah.
How do you not screw up the construction risk?
So it's a really interesting one because I think it's all about accountability. I think everyone should be accountable. And if you look at what we are trying to do in governance terms, no member or officer is actually a board member of Reside or Be First. They are their own boards. They have their own risk. Now, we are the shareholder. It's the same as we was with the film studios. We were the people that put it through planning. We were the people that came up with the design. But we don't know how to run this, so why try and run it? And this is where you need the partnership between public and private. So, yes, we can borrow the money cheaper, which lowers the risk. We can bring together land acquisition, CPO, lower the risk. We can do a lot of things to lower the risk. What we've got to make sure, though, is the business model works over whatever period. Because the other thing about local government or government in general is it's always going to be there. So at the moment, the market very much does short-term risk borrowing. And I'm saying, well, actually, no. Because actually, in some parts of London, that will never work because you can't borrow the money at the right levels to make it an outcome in the time period you're talking about.
Yeah. I'm just talking about the construction risk now.
No, okay. No. So construction.
Who takes it?
Well, we do.
Do you? Don't the contractors take
it? Well, the contractors do as well. Says that it's a partnership. We tell them what we want built.
Yeah.
In the framework we want it built.
Yeah.
In the cost framing that we want it done within.
Yeah.
They then take that risk, knowing though it's gone through planning quicker than anywhere else. It's already got guarantees, like we will buy all the affordable. Yeah. So we try and de-risk as much as we can from the public sector point of view to support the private sector to deliver outcome. Because no local authority actually directly builds their own homes anymore. So it's a partnership. So both parties have risk. It's how do we mitigate that the best we can for outcomes that we need.
But if the prices go up of the materials and things,
yep,
that's their risk, isn't it?
It is, but then there's sometimes when you've got to be honest about it and say, yes, no one expected prices to go up 30% in 6 months, right? So we need to then look at what happens? Because if those houses don't get built, actually the risk to the local authority is my TA costs go through the roof because I can't house these people. So it's about being practical about shared risk. So we are the only authority in London to reduce temporary accommodation 5 years in a row.
Okay? But have you had contractors come back to you and renegotiate the package?
Well, no, they've come back to us and said, look, this is where we're at. Yeah. What do you want to do? Yeah.
Right.
Now, you mean they say they're going to stop building because they can't sell the private ones?
No. It may be that they might say to us, look, we can build this. Because by the way, when we're doing it, we've 90% of our housing is all rental.
Yes.
Yeah. So I don't worry about the private sector sale.
Yep.
Yeah. This is about how it works in a rental model.
Yeah.
Right. And a rental model is actually much more flexible than a for sale model.
Yeah.
So that does give us a lot more flexibility. Now, it may be they might say we can't afford to do those lower ends. We've got to do more upper. Yeah. So that's fine as well, because actually in London, we need all. And so for me personally, it may be right now that the model says we've got to do 80%, more 80% than we can do council equivalent rents or 50%. Yeah. So if that's where the model goes right now, because that's where the market is right now, we will do that. Bearing in mind, 85% of all the housing we have built has gone to local families. A third of my borough pay market rent. So there's always a demand.
And the market rents in your borough seem to be rising quite high at the moment. Does that affect you at all? I've noticed in the papers that, you know, Barking and Dagenham house prices,
yes,
rents level. How's that affecting you?
Well, it's a case we are in the marketplace, so actually we dominate the marketplace. We're the largest private landlord and the largest council social landlord as well. So by being both, we can manage the market. So if you take Grainger, a great company, they worked with us when they first come in. They thought it was going to take them 6 months to rent out their properties. It took them 6 weeks. Apo, which is Eco World, they've got 650 properties. Again, all went straight away. Why? Because we're still the cheapest. And we're able to do that because we've got Reside, who then links into the marketplace. And we're saying, as the owner of Reside, we're saying, we want you to facilitate these six different rental income streams to support community. So we're able to do that because we can borrow cheaper. Remember, when we borrow a much lower rate than the market can. And, you know, even on the schemes we're building today, it was on the pre-inflation levels that came in. So actually, we'll never make a loss on these properties.
Has anybody, you know, any boffins, any housing commission, any, you know, any politicians come around and asked you to distill your model into a how-to and to take it out via, I don't know, say the LGA or somebody to other local authorities who could copy your, you know, take your example?
Well, every area is unique. That's the first thing I'd have to caveat. But is there some principles that we should be following at a nationwide level? I believe there is. So I believe in the right to rent. I believe in the right to invest. I believe in the right to move. Those three things could replace the right to buy. And I say that because 40 years of the housing market not reinvesting in the fundamental infrastructure. Now, when I live on the Beckentry estate, very proud member of the Beckentry estate, but they were homes for heroes. It wasn't known as the Beckentry estate. It was the first of its kind, the largest ever built and copied across the country. Actually, we're doing the same again. 100 years on, 1921 to 33 was the Beckentry. In, you know, 2021, 24 now, we're showing how to do it again.
Everything is built much smaller than it used to be built. It's about 20% in 20 years.
Yeah.
Do you let your builders build to minimum national standards? Or do you say, like Boris said, when I suggested he'd be Prime Minister in the Evening Standard about 10 years ago.
Wow, what a way that went.
I know.
Yeah.
I said it in joke, but I said it because he tried to introduce higher minimum standards.
Oh, you remember that Homes for Hobbits?
I do.
That was one of his great interjections.
It's the only good idea he ever had.
Yes, quite.
So look, I'm
why don't you allow these poor people in your borough to have bigger bloody houses? That's what I'm suggesting.
Because actually, in my borough, 80% of it are bigger bloody houses.
But not the new ones.
No, no, because we don't need the same, right? We do.
Why not?
Because we've got to understand, we either go up or we go out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, London's not going to go out anymore. So let's use the brownfield sites that actually needed development properly. So at this moment in time, we've got some, as I said, after the war, they did a lot of house build. We all know that. It was really important. It was one of the main pillars of our communities. But the problem was we believed that people would stay the same. So what we're now doing is we can intensify, put better infrastructure in and give people really good homes. And
yeah, they but are, what's good?
So at this moment in time, I live on the Beckentry. My gas and electricity bills have gone from £120 a month. I'm paying now £700 a month for the same house, same usage, right? But that's because of the way it's gone and the Beckentry is 100 years old. I can give you a four-bedroom house on the Gascoigne, the old Gascoigne estate now, where it actually costs them £15 a month, right? That's better. That's good. And that's what we've got to do. So what we've got to do, and I agree with you, people need the right spaces. Now, that's a debate. And we need a proper debate on housing. We need to say that not everyone has to pay the same rent, because some people can afford a bit more. And if they can afford a bit more, with the state support, they should be paying a bit more. And I call that flexi tenure. I believe people should be putting in what they can so the wider community benefit from it. The same goes for properties. I can tell you, you come to where we are and you'll look at it and go, blimey, this is actually decent stuff.
Hi, Chloe here again. You're listening to Home Truths, a Building Talks podcast. We'll be back to Jackie and Peter in a moment. But first, a reminder, you can gain access to all the content on building.co.uk or housingtoday.co.uk by going to our websites and clicking subscribe. Now, back to Jackie and Peter.
What's going to happen under Labour? I think I think this is the, you know... We don't care what's going to happen under the Tories anymore. They've done their worst, really. And I noticed that somewhere you suggested that six things need to be brought forward by 2025. I can't remember the exact wordage. I'm sure you'll tell me. That's one thing, if you could address that. I'm very disappointed to see very little more than the Tories have done from Labour. I see nothing in any of the Labour manifesto, in any of the Labour stuff. There's all this nonsense about reforming the bloody planning system, which I'm not going to go into. But I see no promises from Labour at all on the fundamental issue, which Jackie and I have talked about with various people. And the answer, the fundamental issue, Jackie, there needs to be more council houses, correct?
Indeed, Peter. And just to say also, we loved the tone of Keir Starmer's speech at Labour Party conference. You know, we loved the mantra of build, 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 but we would really like to hear some detail on how that's going to happen. And we would like to hear some, you know, some proper incisive thoughts about how to seriously ramp up housing supply. So Darren, you know, no pressure.
So let me start again, always with a caveat, as a politician would. Whatever we say, and we've seen this just in the latest budget, the Tories try and nick it and then make it fall over. So that's why you've not seen what I class as detailed policy from the Labour Party yet, until they call the election. But I think when they call the election, I think you'll see some serious policy coming through on housing. And I say that because in my many different roles, I've been articulating this for a while now. I've proven that it can work. Now, I don't know what they've taken from it. I'm not in the cabinet, shadow cabinet. I'm not, privy to those conversations. I can tell you, I have spoken to Matthew. He does ask my advice.
This is Matt Pennycook.
Matthew Pennycook. He's a very good lad. And he does know what he wants to do, and it's important. Now, I think what was really good, and you should be pleased about, is the deputy leader is in charge of housing and community. Because that's bricks and mortar, hearts and minds. She understands, she's from a very similar background to my good self, you know, proud single parent, working class, may not speak the Queen's English, but gets things done. And that's really, really important. So when you say, what are we going to do? I can't give you a specific. All I can tell you is they have been listening. And I wrote a paper called Build for Britain 15, 18 months ago now. And that was from talking to G15. I was talking to the sector, across the sector, listening to the pain of the sector, it's fair to say, the frustration of all sectors, including local government. And, you know, I wrote in the bits that I thought we could add to, because I think you've got to keep it as simple as possible for people to understand where you're trying to go. So a renter's charter. We need a renter's charter. Section 21 is a disgrace. Yeah, it is killing communities. You know, permitted development rights, it's a disgrace. Yeah, shouldn't be allowed to happen. If you haven't got the infrastructure, you shouldn't be building the homes. And that's really important as well. But a renter's charter on saying, this is what you can expect, but this is what's being asked of you.
Are these 6 points that alluding to?
Sort of, because it's actually nine, but I'll go through the nine with you. And, you know, you've got a little excuse. I won't go too detailed because, as I say, I passed the paper on, right? But a renter's charter, this is what you can expect, but this is what's expected of you. Because antisocial behaviour is a real issue. And local authorities have to deal with it, no matter which tenure it comes under. So we do need to say to people, you've got to behave as good neighbours and expect us, the community, to say you're doing wrong. All right? Second one is community rent model. What I've said about the six different rent levels. Yeah? Because actually, the higher rents will subsidise the lower rents if we do it right. In my borough alone, my HRA, so the housing revenue account, is losing £500,000 a week, yeah? Because we only charge out at one rent, and that's way below the LHA, so local housing allowance, because we've always had very low rents. So actually, is that right? Is someone who's got a household income of £80,000, £100,000 a year coming into that household, should they be paying rent at the same level as someone on £17,000? Right? I personally believe they shouldn't. I'm not saying they should pay on the fact that they're getting £100,000, because we shouldn't deter people from doing well in life, but they should be paying a higher rent accordingly. Yeah. So anything up to £40,000 should be taken.
Just a quick intervention? Yeah, it won't take a minute. Jackie and I did this thing for the Localis.
Yep.
We decided to rename council houses public rental homes.
Yeah.
Have we yet copyrighted that?
No, but we should.
No, but we will. Which essentially looked at how you build houses at social market rent.
Yep.
Okay. But it also suggested that politicians should spend a great deal more of their time looking to fulfill the wishes of those on their council house waiting list rather than those already got houses.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me how many people have you got on your council house waiting list, and why don't you think a bit more about them?
Okay, then. So, Pete, you're going to love this. All right. Don't take this as the norm, because it's not. When I started as leader, there was 11,800 people on my council waiting list. Today, it's less than 4,800.
Well, congratulations.
Okay? All right. So, seriously, as I said, TA, we're the only council in London to drop it 5 years in a row.
You'll have to tell me what TA means.
Temporary accommodation.
Oh, okay.
Right?
It's not rocket science.
Okay, so they're the people that haven't got a home.
Yeah,
they're the people waiting for a home. 85% of everything we have built as the local authority has gone to local families, right? So That's why I had to smile when you said about it, because no one's got a better record than me in giving somebody a home in London today. And I'm really proud. But it's
brilliant.
Linked on this community rent model.
Right, Pete.
All right, so
Pete,
let me carry on.
Yeah, exactly. Can you do the nine, please,
yeah,
Darren? And don't be deflected, please.
Now, I'll try my best.
Renters Charter,
yeah,
we've got community rent model. Number three.
National Property Register, right? So we've already got the land registry. Let's add another bolt to it where actually what you do is you have an MOT for every house. Really, really important. So it doesn't matter what the tenure is of that property. What we know is it's warm and safe. Yeah, so we know it's ready for the 21st century. And if it's not ready for the 21st century, what do we need to do? By doing that, you make it its own asset class. So it doesn't matter the ownership. It means you can get institutional investment to actually retrofit every single property in the country without costing the citizen or the state. All right, then you go, so that's the right to rent. Okay, so the right to invest is a housing bond. Equity bond.
That's number four. Housing
That's
bond.
Number, yep, housing bond, equity bond. All right. Doesn't matter if you give someone 2% of that property or whether they own 100% of that bond to that property. The fact is you equity bond the money to the property that goes up. It means every house that gets built is actually worth something and no house lays empty. And by doing this, it also stops rogue landlords and all the other issues that you have with property. Flexi tenure, in your life cycle, you will start from a low rent, possibly, but because you do well in life, you pay extra. That's flexi tenure. It may be that you want to invest some of it. It may be in later life, you want to take that investment out. You don't have to move, but it should be flexi tenure. Decarbonisation links into...
That's number six, decarbonisation.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Right. And then you've got the National Build Programme. We should have... All public pension funds should have some, I say 5%, something like that, into a pot for social affordable infrastructure homes. That's what they are. They're infrastructure homes, right? And what that means is, doesn't matter what job you do, you can get a home, yeah? And it can't be sold off under the right to buy because it's institutionally owned by the country. And shouldn't. Then you have a national building that links into the National Building Fund,
right.
Yeah, because the two link together. So you've got these British pension funds actually investing in British housing, which has never lost money over the time it's been in a private sector way. And then a National Builders Charter, which means that actually every home is built to the right standard, yeah. Regardless. And by doing that, you can then make sure you get the right insurances and all of these interconnect with each other. So you have now built the framework of Build for Britain, which means we're doing, again, what they did 100 years ago, retrofitting the housing that needs retrofitting, investing in new housing, new towns. And I'm hoping you'll hear some of that sort of rhetoric in the Labour manifesto. I don't know how much, I can't tell you how much, but they're the headlines of the things that I spoke to the Labour Party about.
I just got one question.
Go on.
And I asked this of Toby Lloyd as well, actually. Why do politicians put up targets for housing that they're never going to meet? The Labour Party's target is the same as the Conservative Party target, and they're both moonshine. Why have targets at all? Why not just concentrate your efforts on housing, you know, people on the waiting list or something different than these crazy targets? Because Labour's going to be hung by this target.
Any target's the wrong target if we're never going to make it, right?
Yeah.
Okay, but we already know that there's 1.5 million homes today that could be built, yeah? That would... and. Labour, I know, I've seen it. They're talking about the 1.5 million, right? So the question for me is, okay, we can do targets, but then governments then say, oh, we're not going to do targets and so on. That just makes a whole mess of it. What we've got to say is, what does our society need to actually progress? And it isn't just the target on housing. It is the target of infrastructure. Because one of the biggest issues for local government right now isn't the planning, we've agreed on that. It's the infrastructure that's needed to allow those numbers to be delivered. And our problem is at the moment is we have a really mixed up system at national, regional and local government. We're asking the developer to pay for everything, which can't happen, right? We're asking local government to underwrite all of it, which can't happen. And so what we've got to say is, what are we looking to try and do? Forget the politics of levelling up, which has been a mantra that people have used. Actually, deprivation is just as bad in London as it is anywhere else in the country. In fact, as I say, my borough has the worst indicators in the country, worse than Blackpool. So we've got to take it from the other end. What is it we want our society to become, and how does that happen? So you can have a target, a static number that means nothing to most people, or we can actually have a joint up conversation about what are the values we want to share in the 21st century. And that's where I think we need to take the debate.
Now, the only question I'm asking is why do they propagate what is in fact is a deliberate lie, isn't it? They have no real way of making that come true.
Well, they
Those houses are built by 80% of them are built by the private sector, who build houses to make a profit. And when there isn't a profit to be made, they stop building them like they did last year.
Agreed. But if we'd have actually used the money that was in the system, so at the moment we spend £28 billion a year on housing benefit, most of that going to the private sector. We use a sixth of that to build new, truly affordable homes, either social or affordable, right? So my question is, again, why are we doing that? It's bad business for the country. We need to look at a mechanism that says we're not going to spend the 28 billion and giving it to an individual. We need to take that 28 billion and make it better for the country. That is where we use the pension funds.
Well, why not just say that instead of saying 1.5 million?
Because actually people like you who are great reporters won't like the headline. So they have to break it down to a headline that people can see. Now, as I said before, I believe there should be a conversation. I've proven as a single council, not only have I built what we needed to build, I've also brought in international investment. So I've brought in about £5 billion. There's another £5 billion in train, i.e. the investment coming forward over the years with the new housing and all the like free markets and the film studios and data centres and all the new stuff that's going to come in. That is where we've got to go. I can't tell you about targets, but we should have a target. As my nan used to say, if you kind of reach for the sky, yeah, you've got to at least go up the mountain. Because if you're still down the bottom, and that's the problem we've had, people keep going, target this, target that. Actually, what about the conversation about values? Because, you know, did they have a target of how many homes they were going to build when they did the Anderson Act? I don't believe they particularly did. They had a value that said that every person that come back from the war needed a home because they were heroes. Well, let's bring those values back about what we want to see in our society. Every person, no matter their background, no matter their wealth, no matter their religion, every person deserves a home. So let's start building the target on making sure everyone has a home. Because my grandparents, after the Second World War, lived in a wooden shack with their 10 children on Hog Hill in Hainault, which my father was very pleased about. He shows me the school he used to go to, but he was 9 years old when he got into a house. The target for me is to make sure that one child in every classroom in London is not homeless. That's my target.
Good. So Darren, stuff.
Yes,
if we could bottle you up and sell you around the country, we wouldn't have a housing crisis. We're just absolutely fantastic listening to you. But this is the question we always ask everybody at the end of every interview, right? You've given us a charter of 9 points, right? But if we were to say to you, what one thing, if we were to give you a magic wand, and what one thing would you do to alleviate the housing crisis? If I was to hand over my magic wand to you now, what one thing would you select?
I would reverse some of the decisions that have been made over the last 8 years in this country.
That's about 100 things.
There was one particular decision that's absolutely killed the housing market.
Well, go for the one then.
Driven the costs up. Yeah, and made it harder for people to have a home.
And that one decision was?
Brexit.
Councillor Darren Rodwell, leader of Barking and Dagenham, can I thank you for your time today? You've been worth your weight in gold, sir.
Thank you very much, Jackie. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Darren.
Great conversation.
Very enjoyable. Thank you.
This is Home Truths, a Building Talks podcast.
Well, I'm super excited by what we heard. I have to say, I mean, as I asked him, you know, I don't understand why on earth that hasn't been bottled up and replicated all around the country as a model for local authorities getting on and delivering housing. And I would hope and fervently wish that when he becomes a Labour MP, that he does get some traction on these ideas and that we are able to take them out and use them as an exemplar for good practice in the rest of the country.
I think I was most impressed, really, by a sort of question we threw in at the end about the council house waiting lists in Barking and Dagenham. And he was rightly proud of the fact they've reduced them from 11,000 to 4,000. And I don't think there are many leaders of many councils who could boast the same. And he's obviously done so by attacking the housing issue in a quite sophisticated way. You don't feel that he's been very political about it. He's just been pragmatic about it.
Yeah, I got that as well. And I have to say, he runs a very good tour on a regular basis of the borough of Barking and Dagenham. And I would recommend it for anybody who wants to go on it to get in touch with his local authority and to book a place, because it's well worth seeing.
I think on the Labour front, we hope he does well in Labour. I worry that they've made some rather silly promises on the number of houses they're going to build. And I got the impression that Darren feels a bit about the same about the housing targets. But he had an interesting defence of the target whilst sort of remaining silent on whether it could ever be reached. He said the targets are there to allow us basically to build the infrastructure for when those houses get built. And so you do need targets, if only for the infrastructure.
And I was quite encouraged by him, his assertion that we will see an awful lot more detail from the Labour Party when we get to the manifesto stage. And I would just hope that some of his stuff is in there, because certainly he has a track record of delivery in a really what is quite a wilderness scenario. We haven't got many people in this country who can deliver the way he has.
I could just finish by saying agreed.
Well, it only remains for us to say thank you very much to all of you for listening to this edition of Home Truths, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
And it's goodbye from me.
And it's goodbye from me.
Thanks for listening to Home Truths, a Building Talks podcast. More from Jackie and Peter next Tuesday. And a final reminder that you can gain access to all of our content on building.co.uk or housingtoday.co.uk by going to the websites and clicking subscribe. Goodbye for now.